And we're holding on Pei Gimel Amud Beis, the first line, the wide lines. We learned in the Mishnah several cases where a husband waives rights that he otherwise would have had from his wife, starting with where he waives the rights that if she sells her nichsim alug, then she's entitled to, unlike Takonas Usha, which would tell us that she couldn't. Then we have where he waives the rights to the payrus of her nechassim, and we have the last case in the Mishnah was where he waives the right to inherit her. So the Tanakhama had said that works, and Hitaka doesn't inherit her nechassim after she dies, if she dies before him. On the other hand, Rav Shimon Gamliel said that no, he would still inherit her because he's making a tnai against something that it says in the Torah. So Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that the fact that a husband yarshins his wife is something minat Torah, which in the Mishnah Rashi had brought from a Gemara in Baba Basra that explains one place that we get that from. The Gemara discusses there some others, but in any case, Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that the fact that a husband yarshins his wife is daraisa, and therefore he says that the husband can't make any kind of tnai that would override that. It's called masnal mashakosa vatora. So the Gemara says, Rav Shimon Gamliel loy mechula, Omer Rav halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel v'loy mitaymei. So now Rav says the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that the husband is going to inherit his wife no matter what, but not for the reason that Rav Shimon Gamliel said, but rather for a different reason. So now we have to figure out what, so that's all that Rav said. Now we have to figure out what Rav meant by that statement. My halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel v'loy mitaymei. What does Rav mean by that? You're going to say that it means that Rav says the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that in fact he does yarshin her regardless of any condition he made. But you're going to say that Rav is saying not for the reason that Rav Shimon Gamliel said, would it be that Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying that if a person makes a tnai against something that it says in the Torah, then it would be bottle, then your person can't make such a tnai, but the Rav Sava Tnoi Kayam, but Rav would be holding like a different opinion. Now it's actually, the Gemara actually discusses this in Bava Metzia and mentions over there Machlokas Tanoim on that subject. Where Reb Meir says across the board, if a person makes a tnai against something that it says in the Torah, tnoi bottle, then his tnai is always ineffective. And then Reb Yehuda disagrees over there and says that it works by davar shebe mamon. So for example, one example where it comes up is earlier, and we learned earlier in our Masechta about this topic. Suppose that a husband says to his wife, I'm the kaddish you, I'm the nas that I'm not going to be obligated in the three things that a husband is obligated to do for his wife, she'er ksus va'ona, to give her food, clothing, and to have relations with her at specified times. So Rav Meir says the whole tnai is ineffective. He can't be masna on any of those three things. Rav Yehuda says he could be masna on she'er and ksus, because those are davar shebe mamon, those involve food and clothing and such things he can make a tnai on. So now we're going to say that Rav would hold like that. So he would say that normally when it comes to something that involves mamon, normally a tnai would be effective, but v'kasava yerushas abal drabbana. Now Rav in this connection holds that the fact that the husband inherits his wife is drabbanan, though, not like Rav Shimon Gamliel. So this is what we'd be saying. So he'd be agreeing on the practical halacha with Rav Shimon Gamliel, saying that in this particular case, the husband does inherit his wife, but unlike Rav Shimon Gamliel, who's saying that that's because it's a tnai on something in the Torah, because Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that it's daraisa, we would say Rav holds that it's drabbanan, and he would say v'chachamim also chizuk l'divrem yosim mishal Torah. We would say the chachamim strengthen their takonis even more than the corresponding ones in the Torah. So in this case, that would lead just to say, therefore, that even though the fact that he inherits her is only drabbanan, nevertheless, and had it been daraisa, then the Torah would allow him to override that with a tnai. But because it's drabbanan, then the chachamim wanted to strengthen their takana more, because otherwise people are going to get careless with takanas drabbanan, and therefore say that he can't do that. Which, by the way, Tosfos points out that when it comes to peiros in our Mishnah, now we said in our Mishnah that the We said in our mishnah that the husband is entitled to pay, that the husband normally is entitled to payrus of the nechassim of hers, of her nechassim alug, but he can make a tenai to override that. Tosfos points out, the fact is, it's less common to have payrus than it is to have yerusha. Yerusha, as we learned in the Gemara yesterday, it happens often enough that a wife dies while her husband is still alive, especially Tosfos points out that childbirth is dangerous for them. On the other hand, payrus, not necessarily does a woman actually come ever bring in nichsit malug into a marriage at all. Nichsit son barzel, yes, because Tosfos points out, we learned earlier in the Masechta that even the poorest girl who's being supported out of tzedakah, the tzedakah administrators are responsible to give her a certain amount of nedunia, a certain amount of dowry, which becomes nichsit son barzel. So nichsit son barzel will always be, it'll almost always be, but nichsit malug, not necessarily. So therefore, the Chachamim didn't have to strengthen their takana so much.
What is the difference to
Tzon Barzel means that the husband owns them now, and he's just responsible to repay his wife when the marriage is over. So either
when it comes to her.
So that's Nichset Tzon Barzel is typically that Nichset Tzon Barzel is that she owned it at the time of the marriage, and it was written into the ksuba that the husband is taking responsibility for those nechassim. He now owns them outright. But he's taking responsibility that eventually, if he dies or divorces her, that he's going to repay her. So if things still exist, he'll give them back to her. And if not, then he'll reimburse her. That's nichsit son barzel. Nichsit malug is they never belong to the husband. They belong to the wife, but the husband is entitled to pay us from them as long as they're married.
How does that happen?
That happens, for example, if so it could be that she had the assets at the time and they weren't written into the ksuva. She's still holding on to them. More often though, it would be that she got these assets sometime during the marriage. For example, she yarshin them. So Tosfos points out over here, nichsit son barzel, you're nearly always gonna have nichsit malug are much less common. Therefore, yes, the Chachamim can allow the husband to override the fact that he's supposed to get payrus, to override it with a tenai, fine, because it's not so common anyway. But the Yerusha, which is much more common, then the Chachamim wanted to strengthen that. There's a Tosfos in Baba Basra, which is referred to here so we're going to say, so far, we're discussing, Reb Shimon Gamliel had said in the Mishnah, that if a husband makes a tenai to not yarshin his wife, then he says it's ineffective, because he's masnal mashakos v'atorah. Now we're saying that Rav says the halacha is like Reb Shimon Gamliel, but not for the reason he said, but rather for a different reason. We're trying to figure out why. Is it that Rav holds that the Yerusha of the husband is actually only Dirabbanan, but we're saying the Chachamim strengthened their takana and made it that you can't override it, unlike if it had been something Daraisa. So there's a Tosfos elsewhere in Baba Basra, which is referenced here in Masoros HaShas, that gives a different reason. The fact that the husband yarshins his wife is ultimately, it's an extension of a din that's in the Torah of Yerusha. On the other hand, the fact that the husband gets payrus, there's no basis for it at all in any din of the Torah. It's something that the Chachamim purely created as a takana of theirs. So therefore, the Chachamim are willing to let people override that if they so desire, but not Yerusha, which has a basis in the Torah. Anyway, so are we going to say that that's what Rav holds? So in short, Rav would hold that, unlike Reb Shimon Gamliel, he holds that the fact that the husband yarshins is Dirabbanan. He would hold that normally when it comes to a tnaish or a moment, you could override it, and that would be the case were it daraisa. But since it's derabbanan over here, we would say the Chachamim prevented you from doing that because they wanted to strengthen their takana even more than the corresponding din of the Torah. And the reason would be, of course, because something that it says in the Torah, people are less likely to be careless with, whereas something derabbanan they might get careless with. The Chachamim in our Mishnah would say that he does that if he makes a tenai, he doesn't inherit her. Reb Shimon is saying he inherits her regardless. Rav would be saying, I disagree with Reb Shimon Gamliel's premise that it's Daraisa. I hold it's Darabbanon. However, even though normally I hold that you can make a tenai on a Dover Shema Mammon and override even something Daraisa, but here it's different precisely because it's Darabbanon. The problem with that is Vesava Rav Tnoi Kayam. Does Rav in fact hold in such cases of Dini Mominus that the Tnai ever works? Vaha Itmar, we have a discussion about that in Bava Metzia. Ha'oimel Chavere Amanas She'en Lecha Olai Oino. Reuven is selling something to Shimon and he's saying, I'm selling it to you on condition that you don't have any claim of Oino against me. So we know is you have a law, you have a whole perek of, not a whole perek, a half a perek about it in Bava Metzia that deals with all the ins and outs of it. The gist of it, the Torah says, Lo'isonu ishas amiso, you're not allowed to defraud one another. So that means that it applies to both the buyer and the seller. You can't overcharge, you can't underpay. But the rule is, if the difference is less than 1/6 of the price, then we assume he's moichel. Exactly 1/6, we say, kono machzor no, the kinyan is valid, but he has to refund the difference. More than 1/6, then he has the right to undo the sale entirely. So if you have, in other words, so you have Pasha, then an item, let's say, that normally the price of it should be $5, and instead you're selling it for $6. So then that would be considered a no. And if he's selling it for 601 or more, then the guy not only has the right to, then the guy has the right to even be mevatel the sale altogether.
That would now.
So 1 second. So now, if one person says to the other, "Almanas she'ein l'cha olai ayna," that I'm selling you this, almanas that you don't have a claim of ayna against him. So Rav Amar Yeshle Olav Ayna. Rav says he still has a claim of ayna against him because that's making a t'nai against what it says in the Torah. Ushmul Amar Ein Lo Olav Ayna. And Shmuel says that not because it's a t'nai shemamamun. So Tosfos actually points out that. Now, our Gemara over here is the Gemara there in Bava Metzia explains there are two ways to understand Rav's Shita. One is to say that Rav is holding like Reb Meir specifically. Again, we said Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda argue on that exact point. Masna Mashakas Batora. For example, if a husband says, "I'm marrying you, I'm a nas that I'm not responsible for share ksus va'oina," and Reb Meir says it doesn't work at all, and Reb Yehuda says it works as far as share and ksus, just not as far as oina, because that's not a davar shav mamon. So now, one way of understanding it is that Rav goes according to Reb Meir. The other way of understanding it is he could even be going according to Reb Yehuda because the Gemara says there, the difference is, in that particular case, because at least in the case of Sheir Ksus Va'ona, when the wife is willing to accept that tonight, means she knows what she's giving up. She knows that the husband would have had to give her food, would have had to give her clothing, and he's not, and she knows what she's foregoing. Here, in the case of Ayna, he has no idea. He doesn't know what the market value of this thing is. Later, he's only going to find out later on, as the Gemara discusses over there, when he shows it to a friend of his, for example, and the guy tells him he got ripped off. So you could say that even Reb Yehuda, so Rav might say that even Reb Yehuda wouldn't allow you to make such a t'nai like that. So we see that Rav holds. So now our Gemara. So on the face of it, our Gemara works out better if we say that Rav holds like Reb Meir that you can't be masnal mashakos of Atora at all. If you say the second answer over there that Rav is going according to Reb Yehuda, then Tosfos says you could still make it work in our Gemara over here because after all, it's also one of those things you don't know for sure. After all, which one of them is going to die first? You have no way of knowing in advance. So you can also say that Rav would say that even Reb Yehuda wouldn't allow you to make such a t'nai. So the point is then that we see that Rav holds that you can't make a t'nai against Dover Shabbamamun. Maybe only in certain limited cases would you be able to when you know clearly what you're giving up, but in this case, the husband doesn't. As Tosfos says. So how could Rav be saying that I agree with Reb Shimon Gamliel's din, but I disagree with the premise behind it? Because I would hold, normally you can make a t'nai against Mashakos of HaTorah, but here you could make a t'nai against something that it says in the Torah when it's a Dover Shem HaMamon, but here you can't, because it's Rabbanon, when we see that Rav holds in general, you can't make such a t'nai. So that doesn't seem to work. By the way, as far as what the halacha is, as far as that matter of Ayna, different Rishonim discuss the ins and outs. Is the halacha like Rav or is the halacha like Shmuel in that regard? One thing is, even if we say that he says like this, Amanas she'ein l'cha olai Ayna, there still can be where the other guy can make a t'nai that I am moichel, that I'm moichel whatever Ayna there might be in it. So how it works nowadays, even in those times, I mean, obviously things were sold for slightly different prices. A merchant has to make a profit after all. But most in general, when we buy something, most of the time, there seems to be kind of an implicit agreement that I'll buy whatever this, I'll pay whatever the sticker price is, and I'm not going to go afterwards and take the guy to Beis Din for no. Unless maybe if he's grossly overcharging, the truth is Beis Din has a certain responsibility in that regard to make sure that at least as far as basic necessities that people aren't jacking up the prices. But yeah, anyway, I mean, we'll learn a bit more about that in Bava Metzia in that context. Rest Hashem. Anyway, okay, so that doesn't work as a way of what Rav means. Ella, so let's try a different possibility, maybe what Rav means. Maybe halacha could have shimming on the old do amah masna amasha kosav atorah tnoi bottle. Maybe let's say that when he says the halacha is like shimming on the old is as far as the underlying concept that you can't make a tnai against something that it says in the Torah, but v'lav mitaimei, but it would mean that we wouldn't follow Rav Shimon Gamliel's reasoning that comes from that. De'ilah Rav Shimon Gamliel sava mesa yiroshena, v'rav sava mesa lo yiroshena. So maybe therefore we would say Rav Shimon Gamliel says the result is that he would yaushin her because he's making a tnai against something that it says in the Torah, but Rav would be holding that the fact that the husband yaushins is not d'oraisa, is only d'rabbanan. And we would say that therefore the tnai would be effective and therefore he wouldn't yaushin her, because now we would say, let's say that maybe Rav means that maybe Rav does not hold of what we said before, that the Chachamim strengthen their takanas even more than the corresponding thing of the Torah. So we would say when it comes to something min haTorah, then if he makes a tnai against it, tnoi batal. But if he makes something in d'rabbanan, then the tnai is effective. So here, Rav would be holding that the Tanai is effective.
You know, the Rabbanan when...
So sometimes we say Chachamim also Chizuk, but in this case, Rav would be saying not so. The problem with that is, that's the other way around. Rav said that I agree with the halacha that Rav Shimon Gamliel said, but not with his underlying reasoning. Here, what you're saying is the other way around. He agrees with his underlying reasoning of Masna, Masha, Kosev, HaTorah, but he's disagreeing with the practical halacha that comes out of it. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, he would yaushin her, and according to Rav, we would say he doesn't yaushin her. So that doesn't work either to understand what Rav means. Again, we have this one line that Rav said, halacha could Rav Shimon Gamliel, v'lo mitaimei, so we're trying to figure out what Rav meant by that statement. So let's try another one.
I want to pause for a second.
Yeah. So therefore, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, right, we're saying in the Mishnah, because he's making a tnai against something that it says in the Torah, and such a tnai is ineffective, since Rav Shimon Gamliel holds the fact that a husband yaushins his wife is d'oraisa, therefore, yes, even if he makes a tnai that he's not going to yaushin her, he still does, says Rav Shimon Gamliel. So are we going to say now that Rav would say that he does in fact yaushin her because it's d'rabbanon, but then he's not agreeing with the practical halacha that Rav Shimon Gamliel said, and that wouldn't fit with his words, halacha could Rav Shimon Gamliel v'lo mitaimei. Then it should be the other way around. You should say, I agree with the tam of Rav Shimon Gamliel. In things d'oraisa, you can't override, it with a tanai. For example, in the case of Anah, but in this case, it's only d'rabbanon, and therefore you could. Why might he make such a tanai?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I mean, one reason might be, for example, if her nechasim are more trouble than they're worth. You know, sometimes you have, you inherit a white elephant or something, and it's more trouble than it's worth. So who knows? Whatever the case, he made such a tanai.
What are you saying? I'm not marrying her for your money.
Yeah, it could be also he wants to demonstrate that he's not marrying her for her money. That's a good point. Yeah, there could be any number of reasons. Yeah. Okay. So let's try another possibility. Ella halacha could Rav Shimon Gamliel do amay mesa yirashena. Maybe what he means is the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel that if she dies, he does yaushin her. Because the lav mitaimei. But we would say not because of the reason Rav Shimon Gamliel gave. The ilah Rav Shimon Gamliel suffer b'dar raisa tnoi bottle. Let's analyze what Rav Shimon Gamliel says. He says masna amasha kasa b'torah. If it's written in the Torah, then you can't make a tanai against it, implying Hobe d'rabbanan tnoi kayim. So it seems to imply Rav Shimon Gamliel would say if it's something only d'rabbanan, then you could override it with a tanai. V'rav sova afilu b'drabbanan tnoi batal. And Rav meanwhile would say that even in things d'rabbanan, his tanai would be batal. So maybe that's what he means. The halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, but Rav Shimon Gamliel is limiting his principle to only d'oraisa, and I'm saying it applies even to things d'rabbanan. What kind of things did Rabbanan? Rashi says, for example, it would refer to the fact in the Mishnah when he made a tnai that he's not going to have peiros from her nechasim, then it would include that. Tosfos says, come on, I mean, the fact is, if we look in the Mishnah, we talked in the Mishnah about Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, we had that if he only says peiros, then he still has the right to pay the peiros, but everybody agrees that he can make a tnai to not have peiros. Like Tosfos said before, because having peiros in the first place is not a common enough thing for the Chachamim to worry about that you can't make a takana against it. So rather, Tosfos says, okay, we're not talking about peiros. We're talking about other kinds of things, d'rabbanan, that Rav would hold that you can't override them with a tanai either. Anyway, if you're going to say that, So hai katame uki hochosehu. Then it wouldn't be right for Rav to say, I agree with Rav Shimon Gamliel's halacha with the actual practical din, but I disagree with his tam. Because here it would be he agrees with his halacha, he agrees with his tam. Namely, he's saying you can't override something that it says in the Torah with a Tanai. Rav Mosifu. All Rav is doing is adding that is that it applies to Dirabonin as to Dirabonin as well. So that wouldn't, we can't really call that he's disagreeing with Rav Shimon Gamliel's premise. He's agreeing with it and he's adding, you're saying it applies only to Dodaisa, I say it applies to Dirabonin as well. So that still doesn't work. Ella, no. What we have to understand is what Rav means, halacha could Rav Shimon Gamliel, da'oma yimesi yirashena, so he holds the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that if he dies, he inherits her, v'lav mitaimei, but what does he mean when he says not because of Rav Shimon Gamliel's reason, de'ilu Rav Shimon Gamliel sava yirushas habal da'oraisa. Now, Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that the fact that the husband yarshins his wife is da'oraisa, and therefore, and if he makes a t'nai against what it says in the Torah, then his t'nai is ineffective. The Rav Sava Yerushas Habal Dirabonon, Rav holds that the fact that the husband yaushins his wife is only Dirabonon, Vacham also chizik l'gram kishel Torah. The Chachamim strengthen their takana to be equal to something in the Torah. So in the first possibility that we brought up of what Rav might mean, We thought that Rav would hold that when it comes to that normally when it comes to Dovashim and Mammon, then usually the Tanai is valid, and only in this unique case, are we saying the Chachamim strengthen their Takana beyond what it says in the Torah. But now that we established at the top of the Amud that Rav in general holds that you can't be Masna Amasha Kosav HaTorah, then what it is Rav would say, if it was Minat Torah, then you're right, you couldn't override it. If it was Dirabanan, normally you could, because it is a Dabar Shem Mammon. However, in this case, the Chachamim strengthened their Takana and said that you can't. So that would mean that fits with everything that we know of what Rav holds elsewhere, and that makes it that Rav holds like Rav Shimon Gamliel's reason, like Rav Shimon Gamliel's halacha, that he does inherit her regardless, but not his reason. Because he'd say, Rav Shimon Gamliel, your din is premised on the fact that the husband yarshins his wife minat Torah, and that you can't override that with a Tanai. I say it's only Dirabanan, you can't override it with a Tanai. So that would be. But the question is, Rav Sava Yerushas Abal Dirabanan? Are you telling me that Rav holds that the husband inheriting his wife is only Dirabanan? V'hatnan, we learn in a Mishnah, in Masechta Bechoros of all places, because it talks over there a little bit about the dinim of returning land in Yovel. The main discussion of that is in Masechta Erchin, but in Masechta Bechoros you end up with a little digression into that. And the Mishnah says over there, Rabbi Yochanan Brokoimer, Hayorish as Ishtoi, if a husband inherits property from his wife, Yachzu Livnei Mishpacha, he has to return the property to the members of her family in Yovel, V'yinakla hen min adomim, and deduct from the price. So now it sounds like what it means is that when he yaushins his wife, that when it comes Yovel, then that gets undone and he has to return it to them, but they would have to pay him a small amount for it. They'd have to pay him a token amount for it. So the question is, why does Rabbi Yechim and Baruch say that? So we discuss in the Gemara in Bechoros, my kasava. Why does Rabbi Yechim and Baruch say, on the one hand, that he has to return it, but on the other hand, that he can charge them for it? E kasava Yerusha Sabal Doraisa. If Rabbi Yechim and Baruch holds that the husband yaushins his wife on a Doraisa level, amai yachzu. Why should he have to return it? Oh, Yerusha doesn't go back in Yovel. When you buy property from somebody, when you get a property as a gift from somebody or something, then it goes back in Yovel, but not when you yaushin. So why should the husband have to return it at all? The Yidirabonon, and if his Yerusha that is only Dirabonon, Domi Mai Avitai, then why should there be any money? The same way as we don't say, if we said that it was only Dirabonon, meaning Doraisa, we would consider it like a sale. The same way as when Reuven sells Shimon a property, we know that Shimon gets it back in Yovel, gets it back in Yovel for free. Shimon doesn't have to pay him any amount. So why should it be any different over here? The husband, in effect, if we would say that this is only Dirabonon, the husband, in effect, bought it from his wife. Well, now it goes back like any other sale in Yovel. So why are we saying Yinak Lehem Min Adomim? And the Omer Rav, so Rav explains what Rabbi Yechon ben Broka means. La'olam kasava Yerushas Abal Doraisa. In fact, Rabbi Yechon ben Broka does hold that the husband Yavshin of his wife is Doraisa. But we're not just talking about any property. We're talking about that he inherited from his wife a family Beis HaKvaris. And therefore, Mishum Gam Mishpacha, so the reason why he has to return it to her family is because of the degradation, the lack of cupboard for the family. Like this, you're gonna have the habit now that the place has been sold, they're gonna have to usually you had people would bury their families and family plots. So now you have like this, they have to go and find someplace else to bury the members of their family. And meanwhile, strangers are being buried with them, which Tosfos points out. Now, what happens is that until Yovel, it's not really noticeable so much because, okay, people buy and sell property all the time. But Yovel, you're going to have other properties are returning to their owners, and this one does not. Therefore, all of a sudden, you have a tremendous Pagam Mishpacha. That everybody knows now that this property was sold, or that this property left the family and is now in the hands of a different family.
That's what in our case.
So we're talking about so specifically Rabbi Yechon ben Broka's din about Yachzor, the name of Shpacha, the Yinaklam, and Adomim, we make him return it to them. So normally the fact that he Yavshin it would be Daraisa. So normally he shouldn't have to return it, like any Yerusha. But because of Gam Mishpacha, we're telling him he has to return it. But the point is that Rav is saying that Rabbi Yechon ben Broka holds that the husband Yavshin is Daraisa. At this point, the Gemara is assuming that Rav himself holds that way.
Why are you giving it back for
him? No, he's giving it back because that's the thing. We're giving it back because of, in this specific case, because it's a Beis HaKvaris of the family, and therefore there's Gam Mishpacha.
You're not going against Mashiach.
No, because the Chachamim have the right to make the Konos to override a din in the Torah. But one second. So we're not overriding the din in the Torah. We're making, so we are. We're saying he Yavshin at Daraisa, but nevertheless, we're still Hefker based in Hefker, and they have the right to tell him to give it back. Omer Rabbanan Lishkol Dami V'Lahadim. So the Chacham say, okay, what you have to do is you have to reimburse him. It was an asset that he inherited from his wife, after all. So therefore, you have to reimburse him. Umay Yinakala, and then he has to return it to them. Umay Yinakala Han Min Adomim. So what do we mean when we say he has to deduct from the price? We thought it meant that he has to just accept the token amount in repayment. No, what we mean is that when he's returning them the property, he is entitled. They're paying him for it. However, they can deduct the price of the kaver that he used for his wife. He yaushin his wife means that his wife died and he buried over there. We learned earlier in the Masechta that the husband, one of the husband's responsibilities towards his wife is to pay for her burial. So therefore, means that he deducts the amount, the cost of her kaver, which he was chayiv in that after all, so he can't charge them for that part of the plot. Kedetanya, as in fact we learn in a braisa, hamoicha kivroi v'derech kivroi, if a person sells his kaver to somebody else, or the road to his kaver, or mamodoi, or he sells his place of maimod, which is where the places where they stand on the way to the levaya. They stop in different places and say hespedim or umokam hespedoi, or a place where they make a hesped. So these are all different things that have to do with the process of burial. So the fact is, even though he sold it, the members of his family are still entitled to bury him there, even Baal Kocham of the other people who bought it, because of Pagam Mishpacha, because otherwise it's a humiliation for the family that their relative should have to be buried someplace else, not with his family. So on the face of it, we see that Rav holds that the husband yaushing his wife is actually Daraisa. Otherwise the whole thing doesn't work. So the answer is Rav Latay. The answer is Rav is just explaining what Rabbi Yechon ben Broka's shita is. He himself doesn't have to hold that way. He's saying, why does Rabbi Yechon ben Broka say that the yachzor of Bnei Mishpacha, the Yinaklam min Adomim, is because of this matter? But he himself may well hold that the Yerusha of the husband, that the husband yaushining his wife, is only Dirabbanan, and therefore, fine, so it's only Dirabbanan, then we're back to what we said before. Normally, we would say that Rav would say that when it comes to a matter of, that when it comes to any kind of Takon and Dirabbanan, then you can override it with a Tanai. But in this particular case, the Chachamim strengthened and buttressed their takana and said that you can't do that. So therefore, the result would be that the husband does yarshin his wife regardless of any tanai he made, which is like what Rav Shimon Gamliel says in the Mishnah, but not because Rav Shimon Gamliel had said because he yarshins her daraisa. Rav himself would hold the yarshins only under Rabbanah.
So the bottom line, this field that he gets from his wife after she died becomes yoimel, he has to give it back.
So according to Rav, yes. So according to Rav, since he yarshined it only derabanan, then yes, he would have to return it in yoimel. According to the
field, or if it's a basic chorus, no difference.
So a basic chorus, we're saying regardless, we have a specific takana of the chachamim that Rabbi Yechim and Breka is saying that he has to return it regardless. The difference is that he's entitled to reimbursement. According to Rav, though, Rav himself would hold that him yaushining her is only derabanan. So according to him, he wouldn't be entitled to anything back. Because only derabanan.
Happens to be that yesterday's last perik, the last
halacha in the
Rambam.
Exactly perik echad of Rambam. Okay, very cool.
I want to ask you, I wasn't sure.
Okay.
No, I explained.
So now, good. Okay. All right. Mishnah says, Misha Mesvi Niach Isho Balchoy Vyoshin. A man died. He left over a wife who needs to collect her ksuba, and a Balchoy who he owes money to, and Yoshim, who are supposed to inherit his estate. Now, suppose that the person himself who died has a pikodin that somebody else is holding for him, or he has a loan that he lent to somebody else. Reb Tarfon says that we give that pikodin, or we give that milva to the weakest one, we're going to see in the Gemara which one that means. Which one we're going to say is considered the koshal, which one is the weakest. Now, the point is, in other words, Rashi says, normally when Yisoimim inherit property from their modish, from their father, usually only the character is usually under a shtibur to the ksuba and to the baal choy. Here we're talking about metaltlin. Nevertheless, since those metaltlin are not yet in their reshus, then therefore Reb Tarfon holds, we will take them away from the loiva, or from the one who's holding the pekodin, and give it to the baal choy, or give it towards the ksuba, because after all, those were things that the father was chayiv in while he was alive. So Reb Tarfon says, we have to take it away and we have to give it to one of them. Which one are we going to give it to? The one that's the koshal, the one that had the one that's the weakest. And we're going to see in the Gemara which one is considered the weakest. Yeah, because that's how the ksuba works, actually. As soon as he dies, then his wife is entitled to collect the ksuba. That's how a ksuba works. The whole point is that if he dies or if he divorces her, then he has to pay out. He or his estate has to pay out a certain amount. Rabbi Akiva in merachim badin. Rabbi Akiva says no. You don't apply rachmim when it comes to judgment. You don't say whichever one is the weakest you give it to. You want to make a pshara beforehand, fine. But when it comes to the actual din Torah, you got to follow the letter of the law. So Eli Yenostel Yoshin. Rather, Rabbi Akiva says, you give all of those metaltlin to the Yoshin, and Rashi adds also the word, v'loy mahanya tfisa, even if the Baal Chayv, or the woman, were to grab a hold of those nechasim before they were taken from the loiva, or before they were taken, they themselves go over to the loiva, or they themselves go over to the shomer, and take it from him, then nevertheless, that still wouldn't work for them to be able to say, I'm the muchzik in it, I'm entitled to it now. We would not say that. You give him to the Yoshi. Because Kauka, you can't take away from anybody. Kauka, by definition, you can't mask it. You can't be masked it. No. So normally you don't have a shibud on metalka. Normally all you have is a shibud on Kauka. But in this particular case, Reb Tarfon holds, since it's not in the chazaka of the Yoshim yet, then therefore the rule of metaltlin of Yoshim not being under a shibud does not apply, and therefore you would in fact give it to the Baal Chayv or to the wife. But Reb Akiva now is disagreeing and saying that not only you give it to the Yoshim, but even if the wife or the even if the almana or the Baal Chayv were to grab it, it still wouldn't help. So
I'm just saying it's gotta be be such a situation. Otherwise, yeah. They're not giving us our svara.
Right. Well, we're going to see the svara in a second. In fact, Maharal Shor explains over here when Rashi adds the point, Beloy Mahanya Tfisa, Rabbi Akiva is going to go on in the Mishnah to say the reason is because all of them need a Shvua in order to collect in the first place. So right now we need Rashi to be saying that Tfisa doesn't, because of that, Tfisa doesn't help. Further on, the Gemara is going to discuss a different point of why they don't get it according to Rabbi Akiva. So Shakul and Tzrich and Shavua, so Rabbi Akiva points out, when you think about it, the Baal Choyv, or the woman, has to take a Shavua before they collect. The Baal Choyv obviously has to take a Shavua before he collects, because it might have been paid off. In the case of the Ksuba, when the husband is alive, if he divorces her, then we don't make her take a Shavua, except in certain cases that we're going to learn later on in the parak. But in general, there's a rule. Whenever you're coming to collect from Nichsi Yisraelim, you always have to take a Shavua. So they need a shvua. Without the shvua, we don't even have a solid proof that they were actually owed this money anyway. They ain't a yoshin, tzrich and shvua. Whereas yoshim don't need a shvua in order to inherit. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva says, therefore, they're considered more than, they're considered that they have a greater chazaka on this property. Next, another case, hiniach peiros tloshim min hakarka. What if the father, when he died, left over peiros that were detached from the ground already? So then those are like any other metalplim, kolakoidim, behen, zacha, behen. Then whichever one gets them first, then they're able to keep it. So now, in other words, now this is still following Reb Taufin's opinion, who says, in effect, what we said before is Reb Taufin would say, even though after the guy died, they were tofus it, that still was effective. So he's going to say the same thing over here. There are payers that were detached. They're metalpin, but the Baal Choyv or the wife go and grab them to pay off their debt or to pay off their ksuba. Reb Taufin would say it would work. As we said, Reb Akiva says that no, tfisa does not help. We're going to discuss that point in the Gemara about tfisa la'acha misa. We're going to get into that.
He was the only one who holds different.
Well, Reb Akiva, it's Reb Akiva against Reb Taufin. It's two Tanoim, one against the other. We're going to see in the Gemara who the halacha is like as well. What happens if the wife ended up grabbing more of these payers than are needed to pay off her ksuba? Or what if the Baal Choyv ends up grabbing more than is necessary for his choyv? What do we do with the extra? So what do we do with the extra? So again, Reb Taufin says, we give the leftover to whichever one has the weaker position, which in this case, Rashi says, means whichever one has a shtar. Because Yad Baal Ashtar al Tachtoina, as we discussed in the Gemara yesterday, when a person has a shtar, that automatically means he can only collect what we can say for sure is in the shtar, no more than that. And therefore, in this case, the fact is, if this property ends up in the hand of the Yisraimim, nobody else is going to be able to collect from it because you can't collect from the Talfman of Yisraimim. Therefore, the Talfman says you give it to whichever one is holding a shtar. But again, Rabbi Akiva in Menachem Badin. Again, Rabbi Akiva says you don't have Rachmanos in Din. Eli Yenosnu LeYoshim. Again, you have to give that extra amount to the Yoshim. And actually, we're going to say in the Gemara that Rabbi Akiva is saying not only about the Moiser, even about the basic amount. We're going to say in the Gemara he doesn't allow them to do Tfisa in the first place. But certainly when there's Moiser, he said, and then you give him to the Yoshim for the same reason as before. Shakul and Tzurich and Shvur, Beni Yoshim Tzurich and Shvur. Because the Baal Choy, for the woman, in order to even be able to collect, they need to take a Shvur, whereas the Yoshim do not.
What is the solution different than when we speak about regular
Talmud? So because here we're talking about. Because the regular metalplin were in somebody else's hands. They were pekodin or milva biyad acher. Here we're talking about metalplin that were in the property that were on the property at the time. They weren't in somebody else's hands. They were. We're gonna discuss them. Right, but we're gonna talk about in the Gemara actually. One second. We're going to actually talk about in the Gemara where these payers are located. Are they located in his Rishus? Are they located in Rishus Arabim? We'll get to that soon in the Gemara. Yeah. So first of all, the Gemara asks, Lomali l'misni milva, lomali l'misni pikodin. In the first part of the Mishnah, when we say that he had a pikodin and milva b'yad achev, why do we need both? And the answer is tzricha. We need both of them. The iton of milva, because if we only said that this din applied, that this machloikas of Reb Taufin and Reb Akiva applies to a milva, you would say, Bahoka Amar Reb Taufin. You know why? Reb Taufin says that we give it to the Baal Choyv, or to the wife, Mishum de milva lohitsan nitna. because a milva, it even if the money actually exists, we consider it as though it doesn't. As soon as a person gets a milva, he's entitled to spend. So therefore, we don't actually have the money be'ain right now, so that we should say that it belongs to the yisoyim. So he can say it's not considered a nerushus. Avol pekodin the ise be'ene, but pekodin actually exists. The shomer can't use the pekodin for himself or anything. He has to hold on to it until it's time to return it. So therefore, the ise be'ene, so that exists as it is. Ema moedile le Rav Akiva, maybe he would agree to Rav Akiva that we consider that to be in the chazaka of the yoshim, because the actual item itself has to be returned. So maybe therefore, fine, it's not physically in their reshus right now, but it ought to be considered as if it is, because at any time we could tell the shomer to return it. The itonaha, vice versa, though, if we only had the case of the cotton, you would say Bahaka Amar Rav Akiva. That would mean maybe that's why Rav Akiva says that only in that case do we say it belongs to the Yisoyim, Aval Bahach, but in the case of a milva, Ema Modula Rav Taufin, maybe he would agree to Rav Taufin, because after all, the money doesn't exist right now. There's a debt that they owe a certain amount, but the money is not actually available right now. Maybe that's not considered that it's in the chazaka of the Yoshim right now. So therefore, it's Tzricha, we need both of them. Therefore we consider the milva doesn't really exist right now. What you have is a piece of paper that says that you owe X amount, as opposed to a milva, you have an actual object which your father owned, and now you're yarshim from him. So maybe Rav Taufin would agree with Rav Akiva. Then in that case, we say that it's considered to be in the chazaka of the yarshim. So we said that Rav Taufin says in both parts of the Mishnah, you give it to the koshel. So my lakoshel, what does that word lakoshel, the weakest one, mean? It means the one who has the weakest raya. So Rashi says what it means is the one whose shtar is dated later. Meaning, now we know that when a person has a shtar, whether it's a ksuba or whether it's a balchoy, then they're entitled on the basis of that shtar to collect not only from nechosim b'nei chorin, not only from real estate that the guy owns when he dies, but also from nechosim b'shubadim, property that he previously sold to somebody else, and there's a shibud on it. But if they have a later dated shtar, then they're in a weaker position. There are people that bought property from him where they're not going to be able to collect from because it was before their halva or before their ksuba. So therefore, Rav Taufin would consider that person to be the koshel. The Rif actually has a different explanation and says that the Baal Choyv, like what you were saying, the Baal Choyv is always considered the koshel. The Rambam follows that, which is probably why you were familiar with that. I mean, the halacha is not like Rav Taufin anyway. We're going to say on the base, the halacha is like Rav Akiva. But in any case, the Rif holds that the Baal Choyv is considered the koshel for one thing, in the sense because he actually spent money. He actually lent out money. So as opposed to a woman, when she got married, there's no particular asset of hers that she gave away in order to get married. So therefore, in that sense, the Baal Choyv is like in a weaker position because he actually gave out money and expects to have it back.
Dunya,
fine, but even so, I mean, there's also she's getting benefits from it and whatever. Rashi learns that the koshel means misha shtore ma'ucher. The Rif learns that it means the Baal Choyv. Incidentally, there was an interesting discussion among the Rishonim. We said in the Mishnah that Rabbi Akiva disagrees, and he says because the Baal Choyv and the Ksubas Isha require a Shavua. Now, you can have a case, talking before about, we'd say, Masna, Masha Kasa Baterda, you can make a T'nai to override that. You can say, I'll allow you to collect without a Shavua. So in that case, would the same Machlokas apply? So there are Rishonim who say that in fact not. In that case, Rabbi Akiva would agree that you give it to the koshel because in that case, then it's not a matter of that one needs a shvua and the Yoshim don't. On the other hand, other Rishonim refer to something in the Yerushalmi that says no. Rabbi Akiva's reason is fundamentally has to do with who is muchzik in the nechosim right now. The fact that he mentions the shvua is kind of a side point, but it's not the real reason why he says that why he says you give it to the Yoshim. The real reason is because the Yoshim have a greater chazak. So one explanation is that koshel means the koshel shabarai. Rabbi Yochanan omel ksubas isha mishum chinah. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, the koshel means the ksuba of the woman because she's considered kosher in the sense that Rashi says she doesn't usually go and look, she doesn't usually start going and looking and investigating through the nechasim of the mess and find karka to be able to collect her ksuba. So therefore, she's considered the weaker one and mishum china, and we want to make it possible for her to collect her ksuba because of china. Now, china is malashin chen. So there's a few different explanations what that means. Rashi says it means that men are going to be attractive to women. We talked about the other day at the end of the previous parak that you want to make it that a woman should be able to collect her ksuba, however possible, because otherwise she's going to say, why should I bother getting married? I may not ever be able to collect my ksuba. So therefore, some mishum chinah means that we want to give them the extra ability to do that, says Reb Tarfon. Tosfos brings from Rabbi Hananel the other way around that it means. Mishum chinah means we want to make women more attractive to men, that they'll be willing to marry them, meaning therefore, so we want to make sure that for example, that a woman comes in, one marriage is over by her husband dying or divorcing her. We want to have that she should have assets to be able to bring into her next marriage so that a prospective husband will find her attractive. The Aruch says a third explanation of Mishum chinah. He says that what it means is the fact is similar to Rashi, that it's talking about the woman collecting her ksuba, but what we're saying is that because she knows that she's going to be able to collect it, she has a guarantee of it, therefore, while she's married, she'll serve her husband around the house, she'll do housework more faithfully, and that will create greater shalom bayis between them. Whereas, in other words, if she's...
The first husband?
According to the Aruch explanation, we're talking about during her marriage. The fact that she knows that eventually she has a pretty solid guarantee of collecting her ksuba, that itself creates greater shalom bias and makes it that she, therefore, that she does the housework more faithfully because she wants to be on good terms with her husband. So Rabbi Yochanan says, because of that, we consider her to be the kosher. And the Gemara says, Ketanoi, this is actually a machloikas tanoim. This that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, and Rabbi Yochanan are saying is actually a machloikas tanoim. Rabbi Yamin omel a kosher shabaraya v'hu kosher. Rabbi Yamin says that Rabbi Tarfon means you give it to the one that has the weaker raya, the one with the later star according to Rashi, the Baal Chayv according to the Rif, v'hu kosher, and that is the kosher thing to do. Why does he add that point? The Shittim Kometzis brings that he's saying, in other words, even when no other considerations apply, just the fact that they're a kosher is reason enough. Rabbi Lazar, I mean, Luxubasisha, Mishum Chinna, and Rabbi Lazar says that's Luxubasisha because of Chinna, so therefore, so he's saying like Rabbi Yechon. Okay, we said this is all within Rabbi Tarfon's opinion. Now we're going to get to Rabbi Akiva's opinion. So now, he niach peris aploshin. So now we said if he leaves over peris that were detached from the ground, then we said, we said, what happens if the wife or the Baal Choy grabs more than they were supposed to for what they're owed? Then we said, so what do we do with the Moser? So Rabbi Tarfon says, we give it to the Koshel, and Rabbi Akiva says, Ein Merachim Madin, we give it to the Yoshe. So the question is, Rabbi Akiva, my Iriam Moser, why according to Rabbi Akiva are we focusing specifically on Moser? Kulanami the Yoshin Havu. According to him, everything of it belongs to the Yoshin, because according to him, the wife or the Baal Choy can't even do Tvisa. Even that's not effective. So the answer is the Gemara says, "Ein Ochinami." You're right. Rabbi Akiva is not referring only to the Moser; he's referring to everything. But Aidi the Amar of Tarfon Moser, Tonanami Moser. Aidi the Amar of Tarfon Moser, Tonan Iunami Moser. Since Rabbi Tarfon was talking about the Moser, so then the Rabbi Akiva is saying, at least as far as the Moser, you have to give it to the Yoshin. But in fact, he would say that Tfisa was never effective in the first place. So Rabbi Tarfon said something, so Rabbi Akiva is responding back to what he said. But in fact, Rabbi Akiva would hold that all of it goes to the Yoshin, even what they were told us. Because the Yoshin are Mufsak, right? So the Gemara asks, Rabbi Akiva Tfisa lemahanya klal? So you're telling me, according to Rabbi Akiva, being tofus does not help at all. What's the premise of the question? So Tosfos explains that, we learned in the previous parak. You have a case of a shemeres yavam where we have a case over there where there was peiros tloshin and she grabs a hold of them and she can use them to pay off her ksuba, even though metalpin are not usually under a shibur to the ksuba. So the answer is Omar Rava, Omar Rav Nachman, Ruhusha Tofas Mechai. The answer is Rabbi Akiva would say that Tfisa helps, but only if that was accomplished while the person was still alive. And Rashi says, by the way, this is not a svara that Rav Nachman is saying. This is something that Rav Nachman learned from his rabbeim that Rav Akiva would allow tfisa in that case.
So, in other words,
what it is, for example, so let's say in the case of the wife, in the case of the ksuba, if she had in her possession property that belongs to her husband before her husband died, then after he dies, she can collect her ksuba from it.
How do you have it in her possession if it's not under his husband?
So let's say, for example, in the case of the pikadin, let's say, for example, the shomer returned it to her. So then, and now her husband died after that, so then Rabbi Akiva would agree that she can collect out of that.
No, the
husband at one point had been masked in something by a shomer. She went and picked it up from the shomer. Now it's in her possession.
He was out of town.
So that she has enough for the shus that now it's considered that she was toifus, yeah, and it works. Yeah. Okay. Maybe you could say you want to say it applies only to a baal choyv. Maybe. Okay, whatever the case. So if the Baal Chayv, fine. If the Baal Chayv says, you know what, I'm owed this amount of money, give me this pekodin that the guy gave you to satisfy the debt, then fine, he can do that. And then even Rabbi Akiva is going to agree that now he's the mochzak in it. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Rabbi Taufin de manchi hecha. When Rabbi Taufin is saying that if there's peiros, that the Yoshim are not zoicha in it, instead, whichever one gets them first is zoicha to them, where exactly are those peiros located? So Rabbi Shmuel, the Amitavai, which Svurim Menachem Rishas Rabbi. All of this would apply, even according to Rabbi Taufin, only if those peiros are piled up in Rishas Rabbi at the time. So therefore, it wasn't in a place. So actually, as far as the Tefisa, yeah, Tosfos actually said what we were just saying, that only by Baal Chayv would it work, Tofas Mechayim, by Ksuba, it doesn't work. Tosfos gives a different reason. Why the ksuba not? Because lo nitna ksuba ligbris mechayim, because the ksuba is not meant to be collected while the husband is still alive. By definition, it's meant to be collected only after the husband dies or divorces her. So therefore, yes, the Tosfa says to be tofus mechayim for her wouldn't work, only for a baal chayv. So according to Rav Taufin, where are these peiros located that he would say that the yoshim are not acquiring them at the time that their mordish dies? So Rab and Shmuel both say only if they're piled in Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, they're not in a place where any of them can be koined. You can't be koined anything in Rosh Hashanah. But if they were piled in a simta, which is a corner or a side street near Rosh Hashanah, when people are doing business, Rashi described, if they want to, the marketplace, the Rosh Hashanah is very noisy. So if they want to talk quietly about a business deal, then they go off into a simta and the side. So Rav and Shmuel said, if the peiros were piled in a simta, then in fact, even Rav Taufin would hold that the Yoshim were koined. Rabbi Yochanan and Rosh Lakish, on the other hand, both say that even if the peiros were in a simta, even though it's true, a simta is a place where you could accomplish a kinyan. For example, you can accomplish meshicha over there. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan, it's not a mokum hefker. So you can't be machzik in it, say Rav and Shmuel, but Rabbi Yochanan and Rosh Lakish say that you could. Okay. The Gemara tells a case. Dun dayonit k'Rav Taufin. It happened once that some dayonim in a Beis Din paskin like Rav Taufin in our Mishnah that we allow tfisa la'achamisa, that we allow them to grab a hold of the peiros or whatever la'achamisa and collect their debt out of it. Va'ahadre reshlokish la'uvda minayu. But reshlokish made them undo it because reshlokish holds like Rav Akiva that tfisa doesn't help, so he made them undo it. And have the guy give back the metalplin. So Rabbi Yochanan says, you know, you made Rabbi Akiva's words as if they're like halacha l'moshe b'sinai. It's one thing to say the halacha is like l'machila, but after the case has already been paskin to undo it, then I can't agree you should do that. So the Gemara says lema b'hokam yifli. Well, does that mean that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish are arguing on the following point? The Mar Sava Torbid Vamishna Choser or Mar Sava Torbid Vamishna Ena Choser? Rabbi Yochanan would hold that if a dayan makes a mistake in a Dvar Mishnah, now this is not literally a Mishnah, Rashi points out. The fact that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, halacha k'Rabbi Akiva mechaveroi, that's not a rule in a Mishnah. That's a rule in the Gemara. It's a rule of Amiroyim. Nevertheless, it's still considered like a Dvar Mishnah because it's clearly stated. In fact, the Rishonim go on to say that for that reason, anything that says clearly in the Gemara that the halacha is a certain way, then if a person, or in Poskim even, they talk about, even when you have something that says clearly in Shulchan Aruch that this is the din, then you have, it's considered Toya B'dvar Mishnah. So are we going to say then that Rabbi Yochanan, so Rish Lakish would hold Toya B'dvar Mishnah Choyzer, so therefore these Dayanim mistakenly Paskim like Rabbi Taifun, not knowing the halacha should be like Rabbi Akiva, and therefore Rish Lakish would say we have to undo it. And Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yochanan would say, fine, they shouldn't have done that, but once they did it, we don't make them undo it. So and the problem with that is that we know that Tav B'Dvar Mishnah is Choyzer. So how are we going to say, we're going to say that what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is not according to that, to the final halacha? I'm a Tav B'Dvar Mishnah Choyzer. No, everybody agrees that Tav B'Dvar Mishnah is Choyzer. The machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish.